Hi, good evening, everybody. So let's begin the Haggadah Shir for Tavshin Pei Dalid. As those of you who are accustomed to coming to the Shir each and every year know, that what we do is instead of a collection of beautiful Divrei Torah that is the hallmark of a typical Haggadah Shir, that's a little bit from here, a little bit from there, a little bit from everywhere, which is really very valuable if you're looking for a nice vart to say at the Seder. What I try to do instead is to take a Haggadah each year and really go through that Haggadah, meaning to go through a particular Haggadah to see meaning a commentary on the Haggadah, to see the Haggadah through the eyes of a different Gadol B'Yisrael each year. So in the past we've done many, many different Gedolei Torah who've written commentaries on the Haggadah. As I mention every year, I try to only use those Haggadahs that were actually, those commentaries that were actually written as a commentary on the Haggadah, meant to be a commentary on the Haggadah. What you often find is in many of the published Haggadahs, with commentary, they weren't really commentaries on the Haggadah. It was commentaries on Chumash, it was drushes here and there, and it's a good way to sell books if you do a collection of all these Divrei Torah from everywhere, and you plop them into the Haggadah in the most appropriate place. So, but that doesn't accomplish what I would like to try to accomplish, which is to try to be able to see what a particular Gadol B'Yisrael wants us to draw from the Seder, from the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Meaning, it's inconceivable that the Haggadah Shel Pesach was meant to be a series of short varts and gematrias and things like that. That can't be what the Tanaim had in mind when they sat down to write the Haggadah. This was too important for it to just be about beautiful. I'm sure they're all beautiful. Kulam Ahuvim, Kulam Brurim, Kulam. But it can't be that that's what they had in mind. So various Gedolei Torah wrote commentaries on the Haggadah where they tried to draw out what the Baal Haggadah had in mind, what the author of the Haggadah had in mind in terms of the critical messages that were supposed to derive from the Haggadah. So with that introduction, we'll move to the next introduction, which is the introduction to which Haggadah we're using this year. So the Haggadah I'm using this year is called the Maaseh Hashem Haggadah. So you think to yourself, I don't know anyone by the name Maaseh Hashem. Whose Haggadah is that? In past years we've done names that you recognize. So this is probably, other than Rishonim's Haggadahs, which we've never done, this is probably the oldest commentary on the Haggadah that we've ever done in this year. The Maaseh Hashem Haggadah was a commentary on the Haggadah written by Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi ben Harav Rabbein Elio Zal Harofe. He was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef, of the Ramah. So this goes back over 500 years. This is and not only that, this commentary on the Haggadah was the basis for the probably most famous commentary on the Haggadah, the Haggadah Ma'aseh Nisim of the Nesivos HaMishpat of Rabbeinu Yaakov Milisa, that everything was built off of. He uses as his starting point the Ma'aseh Hashem Haggadah. Although many of us haven't heard of Rabbi Lezer Ashkenazi, the Gedolei HaAchronim not only had heard of him, but they have exceedingly high praise for him. The Pnei Yeshua writes in his Haskama to the Maaseh Hashem Haggadah that I would run out of ink and paper if I were to try to describe to you the qualities in terms of chachma and in terms of midos of this Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi. And he said, I remember as a child hearing stories about him and how he was a chad bedora. He was a unique yachid bedoro. Shekol gaone chachme doro hayimaritza migroseim b'shal z'chuvas elav. He was a unique in his generation, where all of the other chachamim in his generation would always send their shailas and their writings to him. And that's a nice compliment, but it's an even nicer compliment when you think about the generation that he lived in. He was in the generation of the Beis Yosef, of the Ramah, the people that wrote the book that all of Halacha is based on. And yet, he was known as a Yachid Bedoro, according to the Pnei Yeshua. In fact, you will find him quoted here and there in the Shailos and Tshuvos Beis Yosef, the Shailos and Tshuvos of the Ramah, the Tshuvos of the Masas Binyamin, the Tshuvos of the Bach. All of the Gedolei Olam of that time period would quote him every now and then. Unfortunately, We don't have so many of his writings. We lost most of his Shalos and Tshuvos, just the ones that are quoted by other people. We have very little in terms of his commentary on Shas, although we have a little bit of it. He wrote much, much more that we don't have. And his most popular svarim, the ones that were preserved, were the Yosef Lekach on Megillas Esther, the Sefer Ma'aseh Hashem ala Torah, and as a section of the Ma'aseh Hashem ala Torah is the Ma'aseh Hashem Haggadah. He has it sectioned off as a commentary on the Haggadah within his Sefer on the Torah. The names of the Gedolim that were that had great reverence for him are overwhelming. The Pnei Yeshua, the Vilna Gaon, the Nesivos, they all revered him. They absolutely revered him, and they write about it. So this Haggadah, is, as I mentioned, it's really part of his Sefer on Chumash, but he carved it out as a section to be a commentary on the Haggadah. The only trick is that you got to know before we start is he didn't have exactly the same nusach that we have in the Haggadah. There are like slight variations. So that at certain points, like he'll ask a kasha, and you'll be like, is that really what it says in the Haggadah? And you'll be right to ask that kasha, because it's not always what it really says in our version of the Haggadah. There are some slight variations. Just in case it does not become obvious through the various Divrei Torah that we're going to share, I'll let you know the themes that I noticed by reading through this Haggadah are the following. Three basic themes that he keeps coming back to over and over again, which he seems to believe are the core messages we're supposed to get out of Maggid on the night of the Seder. One is a sense of pride, a sense of that it's not we were a bunch of nebs who were slaves in Mitzrayim, and then through some luck, we had a benevolent dictator who decided to let us out, and we were okay because of that, and therefore we're just forever indebted and in gratitude to that person. No, we have a sense of pride in the entire story. We're proud of the Avdus. We're proud of the way that the Avdus ended. It's a night of proud of great pride to be a Jew. That is one message comes through very clearly through his various Divrei Torah and Haggadah. A second message that comes through very clearly is the concept of Bechiras Am Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us. Even though we had lots of cousins, it could have been Yishmael, it could have been Esav, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Davka did not choose Yishmael, did not choose Esav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us, which obviously dovetails very well with the first message of a great pride in being Jewish and who we are. And the third and probably most critical message for him, for the author of the Ma'aseh Hashem, is the message of being Mefarsim Kvod Shemayim, that the whole thing, and when I say the whole thing, I don't just mean the whole Haggadah, all of Jewish history, all of our lives are for the purpose of being Mefarsim Kvod Shemayim, of publicizing the covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything points in that direction. So on the night when we're handing over our Mesorah, when we're handing over our traditions to the next generation, we highlight this concept of being Mefarsim Kvod Shemayim. So with that, let's begin our discussion of this Haggadah. It's always a little bit easier to follow along if you have Haggadah with you. If you don't, that's fine. I didn't put in the email that you have to. But most of the paragraphs you probably know by heart anyway after all these years. So he starts his commentary really with Halach Ma'anya, which is the beginning of Maggid. So we're going to skip all of the whatever parts you could say on Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, and Yachatz, and we'll go straight to the Maggid. His style, this is a long introduction, I'm sorry about that, but his style is as follows. He likes to ask many questions on the paragraph, have a yesod, and then answer all those questions based on that idea of what that paragraph is really designed to teach us. Similar to like a Malbim. If you ever learn the Malbim on Tanakh, the Malbim does that. He'll take a section of Pesukim, he'll ask a whole bunch of questions, he'll have an idea, and through his idea, he'll explain all of the questions. Now, the reason I never did this Haggadah before, even though, you know, it's a classic, is that it was never printed nicely until recently. It was the old print. I actually, when we did the Nesivos Haggadah, I mentioned that I don't even know where you get a Ma'aseh Hashem Haggadah. So Becky Mishra's father brought me like a printed out copy from you can see he has collections of everything. He's one of the biggest Svarim collectors in Lakewood. So he brought me but that was the only, and it was like little Rashi letters. It wasn't so gishmak to use. This is it was put out already 7-8 years ago, but it was sitting on my shelf for 7-8 years. I forgot about it, and it's really, really well done. Meaning they not only have his commentary in legible print, but because it's from someone who is pretty much on the border between a Rishon and an Achron, it's like a real limud to learn it. It's not written in like our modern way of speaking. So the whoever put this together, someone by the name of Goldberg, of Rabbi Goldberg, has a summary at the end of each major piece where he says, okay, here were his questions, and this was basic answer. And then in the back, he does something really remarkable. He has a running commentary on the Haggadah where you could just, almost like, you know, how Art School fills in the words beyond the translations, you know. So he has this running commentary on the Haggadah that's all based on the Chidushim of Maaseh Hashem. So if you ever actually learn through the Sefer, it's like a quick chazara of the entire Sefer. Okay, so now we get to Halach Manya. No more stalling. So Halach Manya, he says, I have the following several questions on Halach Manya. First of all, and by the way, one more point of introduction. Some of these things you may be like, well, everybody knows that. That's famous. Yeah, it's famous because he wrote it. You know, like this was the Haggadah that everybody used. So it was the original commentary that all the other commentaries were based on. So I mean, obviously we showed him more commentaries on the Haggadah, but those aren't nearly as user friendly. So so he starts as follows: why is it that Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic and not in Hebrew? He says, oh, maybe you're going to tell me so everyone could understand. Yeah, then just write the whole Haggadah in Aramaic. Meaning, if it's really about having everyone understand, then the entirety of the Haggadah should be in Aramaic. There's obviously something about this being singled out as being separate, being apart from the rest of the Haggadah. Second kasha, he says, why are we calling the matzah dafka lechem oni? That is a very incomplete description of matzah. Lechem oni is a term that's used in the Torah, but the term in the Torah doesn't only mean lach ma'anya. The term in the Torah is meant to describe matzah's role as lechem sha'onim alav dvarim harbe, right? It's the lechem that we use as a prop in telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It means that it's a broken piece of matzah, ma'darko shalani perprusa, so we also break a broken piece of matzah. It refers to a lot of different things. And we say, ha'lach ma'anya, this is poor man's bread, the bread of affliction, which is really only half the story of matzah, right? It's been pointed out by many that the Korban Pesach represents freedom, the Marah represents the bitterness, the slavery, and matzah, both. And yet, when we start the Seder, we're not talking about both. We're just talking about lach ma'anya, that was some bread of affliction. Why? Why only highlight one element of the matzah? A third point, he says, why is it that this entire first segment was not said when the Beis HaMikdash was around? The matzah was lechem oni then also. So why is it that we didn't say halach ma'anya, or at least that phrase, when the Beis HaMikdash, obviously you're not going to say l'shon haba v'aradi Yisrael when the Beis HaMikdash is around, but at least to declare halach ma'anya at the beginning. And fourth, he says, why does the Haggadah start specifically with matzah, by saying halach ma'anya? By Chag HaPesach, we're going to say later in the Haggadah, according to Rabban Gamliel, you need to talk about three things: Pesach, matzah, and maror. So why do we start the Seder only talking about matzah? Why do we give matzah the top billing over here at the very outset? And then he also asks about the double lashon that everybody asks about: Shatacha, Lashon Haba Baradisol, Shat Avdi, Lashon Haba Bnei Chorin. And his basic idea is that this paragraph, which is in Aramaic, is meant to be an expression of great tsar that we experience each and every year at the Seder in Galus. Meaning, it's obvious to everybody that when we sit down at our Seder, there's an elephant in the room. Meaning, here we are, we're sitting down at our Seder, and we're celebrating Geula, we're celebrating freedom, and yet we're still in Galus. We still have Shibud Malchios. We're still suffering through whatever it is. And throughout the years of Jewish history, it's been really awful sometimes, right? So how is it that we can celebrate? And that's what Halach Ma'anya is there to address that that it's there to give expression to the tsar over Churban of Yerushalayim. And in order that everybody should understand that, before we get to the actual mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which comes later, which is going to be done in Hebrew, we want to designate this separately to show that this is to an expression of tsar. And also to show that it's not a it's not part of the Haggadah. It's apart from the Haggadah. Why is it called Lach Ma'anya over here? He says a great chiddush that Lach Ma'anya is not a reference to the matzah. It's a reference to the entire Su'udah. That this entire Su'udah that we have in front of us that we're going to eat tonight, it's all Lach Ma'anya. It's all the bread of affliction. It's a su'uda of affliction because it's a su'uda where we don't have Eretz Yisrael with the Beis HaMikdash at its center, the way our forefathers did. And it was and they were masaking it in the time of Galus. And he says, and that's why we only talk about Lach Ma'anya, because it's not really about the matzah. It's not just an Aramaic translation of the words lechemoni. It's about the entire su'uda. And he doesn't explain in his paragraph why it is that we have the double expression, but perhaps if the whole idea is to show that that we understand that we haven't yet reached our goal, that we haven't yet gotten to a point of geula, so he has the Bala Gada puts a double expression to show that that's the point of emphasis of this paragraph. That this paragraph is aspirational because we know that our aspirations have not yet been met. So that is his understanding of Halach Ma'anya, that it's an expression of tsar, so that we can then move on to go through the Haggadah as we know it, even though right now we're suffering through a certain amount of tsar. So now we move on to the Manishtana. The Manishtana follows, and he doesn't have six questions on the Manishtana. He only has a couple of questions on the Manishtana. His first question is that, it's interesting. Chazal say that Ein Ishto Shoalo, Hu Shoali Atzmo. That who should ask the Manishtana? So it's always the youngest kid at the Seder. Fine. And if you don't have young kids, so whoever's at the Seder. And if it's just you and your wife, during COVID or whatever, so your wife will ask you the questions. And if it's just you, so you ask the questions. He said, where did Chazal get that from? Where does Chazal get that from, that it has to be done in a question-answer form? It's not what the Torah says. Torah says, ki yish'olcha bincha. When your child asks you, so it triggers a need to give a response to the child. It doesn't say that you have to manufacture questions that aren't there. It says that if the kid asks a question, so you have to ask, then you have to answer the questions. So why? And not only that, we do everything in our power to make sure the kid is asking questions. Right? What's the whole point of karpas? Karpas is so that the kid will ask questions. We don't even have an answer to that question. We just want him to be able to ask questions. We do everything we can so that the child can ask questions. It doesn't say that in the Torah. In the Torah it says that a natural thing, that a child at some point growing up looks at his father and says, what's the story with our religion? Like, what's it all about? So then you should tell them the story of our religion. Where do we get this idea of manufacturing questions? So his answer is probably the most famous answer to that question. And his answer is that it's part of the nature of a human being that if you're troubled by something, if you've asked something, the answer has more what they call in today's terminology, stickiness. The ideas sometimes stick and sometimes don't, right? We've all had the experience where you're learning something, perhaps a Daf Yomi or something, and it's just a lot of information, and the second you close the book, it's like if you had to summarize, what was today's Daf Yomi about? I know it was about 39 minutes and 58 seconds. I know it was pretty fast, but what was like... And yet, there are other times where we're bothered by something, where there's a kasha that we have, and we run around looking up sources, and we try finding things, and we come up with a mahalich. That mahalich you'll never forget. Right? When a person has a question, when a person asks a question, the ideas have greater stickiness. So where Chazal got this idea of making sure that there are questions was because this is the most important night of the year. It's a night where our entire emunah, our entire mesorah, has to be transmitted on this night. His second question with Manishtana is as follows. He says, there are so many things that we do different on the night of the Seder. How do we choose these four to ask about? There, for example, he gives the example, most nights you say Kiddush, and then right after Kiddush, Kiddush Makom Suda, you right away, you wash. You have, if you're a yucky, you washed already, whatever, but right away, you start your Suda as soon as you say Kiddush. And yet, tonight, you say Kiddush, and then, like, you wait for a long time. And you tell I may be dating myself a little bit, but some people in the room will appreciate this. There used to be a television show when I was a child called Different Strokes. Yes, we remember? Remember Arnold? Yes. So there was an episode, maybe you'll remember this one, when Arnold wanted to be Jewish. Do you remember this episode? So a rabbi came and tried to discourage him, this little black kid, from becoming Jewish. So the rabbi explained to him that you think the Seder night is so much fun? You know, we get home and then we have to like sit and wait before we can eat. We wait hours before we get to any food. And he said, "What you talking about, Rabbi?" Right? That's something that you would think would pique a child's curiosity, right? That every other night, every Shabbos, every Yom Tov, it's always the same thing. And here is this Shabbos and Yom Tov meal. We go, we say Kiddush, and nothing. So why nothing about that? There are so many things. We're Mosei Kos Sheni before we even had the first bite to eat. What does that mean? Why do we do that? And we choose these. Four. So what he suggests is that there are three basic areas of curiosity that people tend to ask about, right? One basic area of curiosity is if there's something extra, something you've never seen before. I was at a wedding last night, and for whatever reason, the Masada Kiddushin, under the chuppah, called up the Eidei Ksuba to sign the Ksuba. So the whole rest of the night, I was one of the Eidei Ksuba, so they called me up to sign the Ksuba. The whole rest of the night, everyone was asking, why did they call you up to sign the Ksuba? Because it was something new at a chuppah that they've never seen before, that people don't expect. It's something unusual, something that they just wouldn't say. I was going back to my seat. Rav Aaron Lapiansky said, "Is this a YU thing that they signed the Ksuba under the chuppah?" Rav Kalman Epstein was the Masada Kiddushin. It was not a YU thing. It had nothing to do with it. But it was a Zmanim thing. It was a timing thing, whatever it was. But when there's something extra, so that's... So people ask about. Another type of thing that people ask about is when there's something missing, something that you would have expected to be there that isn't there. That's also a point of curiosity. Another thing that people ask about, a third category, is when things are switched for each other. Both things are there, but they're in the wrong order. It's in the schalif, davar ledavar, that something is switched, one for the other. The same wedding last night, first bracha, first person to get one of the seven brachas under the chuppah, said, sha'akol bara lechvodav, which is not the first bracha that you're supposed to say under the chuppah, but the cards are all messed up, because they have the cards for benching instead of the card, whatever. I've seen it happen 1,000 times, so I don't know why no one could print new cards for a chuppah, but then the second bracha was Baruch Pri HaGafen. So someone sitting next to me said, "Is that always the order that Baruch Pri HaGafen?" And said, "No, they messed up because someone said the wrong bracha." So you notice those things when they, last week I was at a wedding and someone got up and said Baruch Pri Adama. That was the first time. I had never seen that one before. That was just like, I had a left, you know, I've heard the wrong Asher Yatzar said. I've heard that. I've heard Shakol Niyabit Varo, but Baruch Pri Adama, I'm not sure where that, you know, where that came from. If he was thinking thoughts of celery or something, I don't know. But so what was I saying? Yeah, so when something is switched, when something is in the wrong order, that's also something that requires that people ask questions about. So he says that's the pattern of the Manashtana. First of the Manashtana is something is missing. Kol Lelos, we eat chametz u'matzah, and tonight there's no chametz around. We're missing the chametz. It's only matzah. Second, it's when things are switched. You know, normally it's shari yirakos, but tonight it's marar. It's not shari yirakos. It's only marar, right? How come normally I eat iceberg lettuce and tonight I'm eating romaine lettuce, right? Everything is it's switched. And the third is on the extra, something extra. We normally don't dip so many times, and now all of a sudden we're dipping so many times. So that accounts for three of the questions of the Manashtana. What it does not account for is the fourth question. And therefore, he says, you've got to pay extra careful attention to the fourth question. Because if there's a pattern that questions normally have, and normally questions come in one of three forms, and the first three are true to form, you'd expect that would be it. So by the fact that we have so many things to choose from, and we ask a fourth question, that's a raya that should... pique our curiosity about the nature of this fourth question. And he says, this fourth question is not a stam question on something that's unusual. He says, it is a fundamental question, why we are behaving in a way that Jews rarely behave. To be sitting behaseba, as if we are proud and arrogant, and as if we are kings, and as if we are, that is not the way we behave, even in good times. Jewish people, certainly not in bad times, even in good times. There's an expression in sports, when a team wins, you know, act like you've been there before, right? You shouldn't, you know, if you're jumping up and down and going crazy, so that shows that you're not used to winning. That's not the way a Yankee wins, right? Meaning you're supposed to behave in a certain understated kind of, all the respect to the Queens people, there's a certain understated manner that a person is supposed to have. For the Jewish people to act with such arrogance, that's the question. And remember, I told you at the beginning what his yesodos are, right? So he's zeroing in on one of the yesodos of the Seder, that for whatever reason, tonight is a night to be proud. It's a night to act like royalty, even though it is a thoroughly un-Jewish way of behaving typically. So that's his Varta Manishtana, but again, it's not a Vart. It's something to keep in mind as we continue to go through the Seder. So then he moves on to, the Haggadah moves on to Avadim Hayinu. And he says, I have several questions on Avadim Hayinu. First of all, Avadim Hayinu b'Mitzrayim. Why the emphasis l'paro b'Mitzrayim? Second of all, how does it really answer the question of the Manishtana? Right? It doesn't really seem to give an answer. Third, he says, why do we start with Avadim Hayinu, but then we say Mishu Badim Hayinu? Right? If how does it go? That Avadim Hayinu l'paro b'Mitzrayim and Ilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sev Seim Mitzrayim, Harei Anu v'neinu v'nei v'neinu, Mishu Badim Hayinu l'paro b'Mitzrayim. Why not just say Harei Anu v'neinu v'nei v'neinu, Avadim Hayinu l'paro b'Mitzrayim, like we said at the beginning of the paragraph? Why does it change to Mishu Badim? Fourth question, he says, this, see if you catch it over here, he says, the Haggadah says that even if we were Kulanu Chacham, Kulanu Nevanim, Kulanu Zekeinu, Kulanu Yodin HaTorah, Mitzvah Leinu Saper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, V'Kalam Saper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, Areza Meshubach. And anyone who tells the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim is very praiseworthy. I don't know, anyone who puts on tefillin is very praiseworthy. Anyone who eats matzah is very praiseworthy. Anyone who takes lulav is very praiseworthy. That's not praiseworthy. That's being a Jew. It's what you got to do. It's a mitzvah. How do you say that he's meshubach just because you're mesaper b'yitzias Mitzrayim? It's literally one of the only two mitzvahs d'oraisa we have on the night of the Seder. You're just doing what you need to do. So you call that meshubach? That's only akasha because of his text of the Haggadah. Because our text doesn't say Kala Mesaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim Harei Meshubach. What does our text say? Harmarbel Mesaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim. Oh, that changes it, right? Meaning our text bavorns this kasha, right? Meaning it preempts this kasha and says, no. Of course, if you just do the mitzvah, you're not going to be Meshubach for just doing the mitzvah. Oh, but if you're Marbel Mesaper, then you're Meshubach. But he didn't have that text. His text of the Haggadah was Kol Mesaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, Harei Meshubach. And he says, I don't see what's so Meshubach about being Mesaper B'Yitzias Mitzrayim. Fifth, he says, it's a little bit out of order, meaning we already started talking about the matzah with Halach Ma'anya. So, and now we say, oh, by the way, you're supposed to talk about things. We should have started with Avadim Hayinu, where we say that there's a mitzvah to talk about things, to talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then gone back to Halach Ma'anya to talk about the matzah. So his approach is as follows. And again, also, I think this one my father says every year at the Seder. I think it's one of the more famous approaches in his entire commentary over here. And that is that, of course, we would not have been slaves to Paro b'Mitzrayim nowadays if Paro didn't let us out back then, or if we didn't get out back then. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't perform miracles, because what would have happened? At some point, Paro would have given up, or his Malchus would have fallen, something else would have happened. So he says, that's why we say Avadim Hayinu l'Paro b'Mitzrayim, to show that we were Avadim to Paro, and Paro did nothing to end that. It wasn't Paro that ended our Avdus to Paro. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu that ended our avdus to Paro. Not just that avadim, we were avadim Mitzrayim, now no longer avadim. It's that Paro was not the one who ended our avdus. And therefore, we have no sense of gratitude whatsoever, looking back, retrospectively, toward Paro. We have no reason to feel any sense of indebtedness to Paro. And that's why it says, yeah, of course, we wouldn't be slaves anymore, but we would still be, if Paro would have been the one to let us out and God didn't let us out, we would be mishubadim hayinu leParo b'Mitzrayim. We would not be avadim anymore, but we would be mishubadim. We would feel a sense of indebtedness to Paro and Mitzrayim. And he says, and this answers that the only question in the Manishtana which didn't belong. Remember, we said by the Manishtana that there are three types of questions: something extra, something missing, something switched. So the first three knock out all those categories. So what's the only question that's an unexpected question in the Manishtana that's clearly there to highlight something? Why are we doing a seba? Why are we so proud? Because there's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's not nahamati kisufa. This is not something that that someone did us a favor and therefore we feel a little embarrassed that we had to take a favor from somebody. No, this was God choosing his nation, and tonight is the night to be prideful of that. And that's why we sit Beheseba. And he says that's why it's he says that's what, when it says Hareza Meshubach, it doesn't mean that you are praiseworthy for doing this mitzvah. He says if you're Mesaper B'Yetzias Mitzrayim, make sure you know that you are Meshubach. Make sure you know that you are a somebody, that you're not some Nebuchadnezzar case who someone had to let out of slavery and save them. No, you are Meshubach. You were handpicked by none other than God himself, and you owe nothing to anybody, to any of your captors or your the people who put you in slavery for all of those years. You are Meshubach, he says. Not that the mitzvah is Meshubach. You do any mitzvah, it's a nice thing to do. It's what you're supposed to do. It's what you're obligated. It's what you're obligated to do. And he says, maybe that's why this is said after the Halach Ma'anya. This is part of the story that Paro didn't do it willingly. And that's it's not just telling us in general that you should tell the story. This paragraph is not just teaching us, oh, by the way, there's a mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's telling us how to frame Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim should be done in a way where there's a great sense of pride, there's a great sense of how proud we are to be a Jew. Now, of course, the question about the order of Halach Ma'anya wouldn't have been a question anyway, because he already explained why Halach Ma'anya had to come first. Because he said Halach Ma'anya was not really part of the Haggadah. It was something that was added in times of Galus, and it was meant to address only times of Galus when we don't really understand what it is that we're celebrating. And he says, and that also explains why it is that we could say Mishubadim Ayin L'Parav Mitzrayim. He says, there's no Malchus that lasts forever. Now, the only people that last forever are the Jewish people, right? Every other Malchus rises and falls, and there's no Malchus that lasts forever. So of course Paro wouldn't still be in power. Mitzrayim would not be a superpower anymore. Yeah, but we would still be Meshubad. Historically, we would be Meshubad. And that's what we're highlighting in this paragraph. Okay, moving along. So he moves on now to the paragraph of Maisa, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Kiv, Rabbi Tarfon, who are Mesubim Bnei Brak, and we're talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So he says, you know, they spent all night talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim, which means that they didn't sleep. The Torah tells us there's a mitzvah, v'samachta b'chagecha. How do you not sleep on Yantif? Where's the mitzvah of Simcha and Yantif? Yeah, how do you, it's Inuy Nefesh, he says. He says there must be something that overrides Simchas Yom Tov that's going on over here. Meaning, it's nice to be extra machmir and to do things marbel saper more than normal, but not at the expense of like an obligation. You have an obligation of Simchas Yom Tov. You're supposed to go to sleep in Yom Tov. You're supposed to enjoy Yom Tov. So what were they thinking over here? So he writes that when they were telling the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, what they're highlighting to us is that part of the mitzvah is to look at each and every nace that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Klal Yisrael, appreciate the reasons for the nace, the specific causes of that nace, what Hashem wanted us to get out of that nace, and so that we could appreciate how much we were chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to build a relationship with us through that night. And that overrides every mitzvah, because that's the foundation of all the mitzvahs. Meaning, it's not just time. I have a mitzvah, secret time, so I'll tell more cool stories, more Divrei Torah about HaGadah. No, you're not supposed to tell Divrei Torah all night. You tell Divrei Torah all night, you're going to be robbing yourself of Simchas Yom Tov. But if the what you're supposed to build that night is the Amunah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as his people, the deeper you could make that emunah run, then every other mitzvah you do in your life is built on that. So this is more foundational than a mitzvah, meaning it's, maybe we'll talk a little bit on Shabbos HaGadol, there's a discussion we've shown him, whether Anochi Hashem Elokecha is a mitzvah. Is there a mitzvah of emunah b'Hashem? So what's the argument to say that there's no mitzvah of emunah b'Hashem? The argument is that it's too foundational to be a mitzvah. The whole concept of mitzvah doesn't exist if you don't believe in God. If there's no mitzvah, there's no mitzvah. So some Rishon, they don't count it, not because it's not big enough to be a mitzvah, it's too big to be a mitzvah. So he says, this night is too big to be limited in any way, even by a mitzvah d'oraisa of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Then the Haggadah goes on, and you have the paragraph of Amar Ablazer ben Azariah, Harei Ani Kiven Shimim Shana, V'lo Zechisi Shetam Ritzias Mitzrayim B'Leilo, Satra Drasha Ben Zoma, that I wasn't Zocha, that people will say Tzias Mitzrayim at night, till Ben Zoma came and said the Drasha, L'man Tizkor, Siyam Tzeskom Yisrayim, Kol Yimecha and the Chum disagreed. The Chum say that Yimei Chayecha is Olam Hazeh, Kol Yimei Chayecha is Olam Haba. So his first question is that this is a Mishnah in Maseches Brachos, and if you want to bring a Raya that you're supposed to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night, why not just quote the exact Lashon of the Mishnah that the Tanakhama says Maskirin Yetzias Mitzrayim Beleilos? We don't mention the actual Lashon that appears in the Mishnah. So what he says is, I'm not going to go through all eight questions that he has on this. Maybe we'll just go through a couple of the questions. What he says is that the Maggid is not trying to bring a raya that you mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim Balelos. It changes the whole paragraph. One of his other questions is, why are we talking about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim? That's not even the mitzvah we're supposed to do tonight. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim is not the mitzvah Salayla. The mitzvah we're supposed to do, I mean, you do it every night. The mitzvah we're supposed to do tonight is Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I'm quoting a drasha from a Mishnah about Zechir Yetzias Mitzrayim. It has nothing to do with the evening. So he says, you have to understand, what this paragraph is telling us is not the Mishnah in Brachos. The Mishnah in Brachos is telling me that you're supposed to do Zechir Yetzias Mitzrayim every night. Laila sometimes means nighttime, and sometimes is a reference to the long, dark galus within which we've lived our entire lives to this point. And he's saying what the Haggadah is trying to highlight is that we have a mitzvah to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim even in Galus, to bring a raya that there's a chiyuv of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim even in Galus, where Akati Avdei Achashverosh Hanan, where we're still meshuba to foreign kings, and there's a svara to say maybe don't celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he brings a raya from Rav Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim that they both hold that you mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in times of Galus, and the Chachamim say even the Imos HaMashiach. But it was a given that in times of Galus we're going to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And with that, he answers five other questions that he has as well. He says it's strange because the Chum argue on Ben Zoma, we pass neither the Chumim. So why does Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah say Ad Shadosha Ben Zoma? So he says no, because this is not that same machlokas. And over here, we're saying everyone agrees that all are on the same page that you have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim in times of Galus, and this really ties back to the Halach Ma'anya. That the Halach Ma'anya was saying that we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim that addressed the elephant in the room of how much tsar we're in a time of Galus. So the question then begs itself, but why? Right? Why do we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim in a time of Galus? And and that ties back to everything else he's been saying, which is that the purpose of this night is not to say that we get to live it up and that everything is great and that we're happy with where Klal Yisrael is in terms of the trajectory of history. The purpose of this night is to highlight that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as his people and has consistently demonstrated, has done everything can to demonstrate his love for us, and we are meant, our mission is to be mefarsem that presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world and the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for his people. And we do that even in times of galus. Even in a time where we're stuck in galus, we highlight those ideas. Then moving along, the Haggadah talks about the Dalet Banim. So he says, you know, by the Ben HaChacham, we tell him Kihilchos HaPesach. Why do we have to tell him about the halachos why does the Haggadah rather have to tell me which of Hilchos Pesach we tell him? Right? It says that you tell him Ein Maftir Achar Pesach Hafikomen. There are lots of halachos of Korban Pesach. The whole second half of Mesach Pesachim is the halachos of Korban Pesach. So there's plenty you could do. Mori Rabbi Rav Shechter, after his Seder, Shai told me that after his Seder, when his Seder ends by Chatzos, because you've got to get all Galakos soon by Chatzos, and then, ideally, and then he doesn't go to sleep, he opens up a Gemara Pesachim and just learns through 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th Prakam of Pesachim until he falls asleep as much as he can, you know, to learn about the Korban Pesach. So there's so many halachos. Why dafka this one of Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Afikomen? Furthermore, he says, you want to tell me one of these halachos? I'm sorry. One question was, why one halacha? And then the second question is, if it's going to be one halacha, why this one halacha? So he says that the she'ela of the Chacham was really about two things. It's about chukim and it's about edus. Chukim are mitzvos that are designated for Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, that are meant to remind us of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Eidos is our obligation to pass that on to our children. It's the Eidos that we give to our children. So even if the mitzvos themselves are not sufficient, because maybe we're not going to arrive at a zechira of the Yetzias Mitzrayim through the mitzvos, nevertheless, the Eidos itself should be enough in that we tell our children all of the nisim that happened in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is it that the Torah tells us we have to do chukim as well? If anyway we have Eidos, we have an obligation to tell our children. So why is it so critical that we need to get to that point of our own zechira? And he explains, because without doing the mitzvos that cause the child to ask the question, then it's not going to stick with him. The ideas aren't going to stick with him. The ideas aren't going to be meaningful to him. And if he doesn't see that it's already become meaningful to us, it's also not going to stick with him. The way to impart a message to a child is first, make sure he's bothered by something, that there's some sort of question, and second, that he sees that you really believe the answer, that it's something that you deeply believe in. And that's the remez of this particular halacha. Ein maftir nachar pesach hafikomen is another way of saying that the taste has to remain in the mouth. And that's metaphorical. What we're saying is that the taste of the night of the Seder should remain with the child forever, that he should always remember. You know, I always point out that my Rebbein, Rav Willig, for example, always says that every single year at the Seder, he says the same Divrei Torah, the same stories, and he says, and every year my kids roll their eyes, oh, here he goes again with that story, with that Divrei Torah. And he says, I do that on purpose, because after 120 years, they're going to tell those same Divrei Torah and those same stories, and their children are going to roll their eyes. And that's there's something to that, meaning changing it up every year is exciting. But if a child can remember, this is what my father did at the Seder. I was Menachem Avil someone this week, and he was telling me exactly what his father said at the Seder. Rabbi Reisman also said, he says same questions every year. He said that he always asks his grandchildren, why are we here? We're Levian. We wouldn't have been enslaved anyway. Like, what are we doing this for? And they're like, Zaidi, you ask that question every year. And he's like, I'm still waiting for you to give me a good answer. But the reason he asks it every year is not because he's still waiting for them to give a good answer. It's because they'll remember. Those are the questions that were asked. Those are the traditions in that family. So the whole point is to make sure that it's something that is able to stick with our children. Another question that's a very well-known question that he asks is the difference between the Chacham and the Rasha. That the Chacham says, Shetziv Hashem Elokeinu Eschem, and the Rasha we blame for being Motzi Asatzmo Min HaKlal because he says Lachem. So he says, he explains, the Chacham is not Motzi himself Min HaKlal when he says Eschem, because he says, Ma HaEdus VaHachukim VaMishpatim Asher Tziva, and therefore he could say Eschem because he's not Chayiv in Eidos. He's still a child. Remember, by his definition of Eidos, Eidos means what you give over to your children. Meaning the Maisa Hashem lived before there was a mitzvah v'igadta l'avicha, back when there used to be a mitzvah v'igadta l'avincha, where the parents would be the ones to teach the children on the night of the Seder. So he said the Eidos aren't shaykh to the Chacham, because he's a ben HaChacham, he's not yet the parent. And Eidos, we said, by his definition, Eidos means that which we tell to our children. For him, only the Chukim are really Shaykh. And therefore, he's not being Motzias Atzmo Min HaKlal, as opposed to the Rasha, who in fact is being Motzias Atzmo Min HaKlal. Moving along, we have a lot more, not so much more time, but we'll skip around a little bit. Moving along. He raises the following question on the paragraph of Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Selilim Hayu Avasein, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zara Hayu Avasein, Va'achshav Kivanu Amakom Lavodaso. So he says, why do we talk about how awful our forefathers were? That they were terrible Jews. They Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zara Hayu Avasein. Does that even relate to Yetzias Mitzrayim? What does that have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? Well, and also, it's a strange way to phrase it. Mitchila. What do you mean mitchila? Just say Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoseinu. What do you mean mitchila? They were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. You could have just said Ovdei Avodah Zalilim Hayu Avoseinu. So he suggests that the Maggid is coming to tell us that saying the Avodah Mayinu that we said before should not be viewed as a gnai, because the tachlis of that avodah was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to draw us close. Again, there's a point he keeps pounding home. The purpose of the fact that we were avadim is so that Hashem could bring us out amongst great fanfare and miracles and show the world his relationship with Klal Yisrael. So it's not a genai. You want to know when we had a genai? It goes way before that. That was mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu, when we were spiritually weak. That was a genai. But that's why Dafka highlights mitchila. Not in this story, not tonight. The story we're telling tonight, there's no genai. There's great Jewish pride in the story that we're telling tonight. If you want to talk about something that's embarrassing, that would be the mitchila. That would have been what predates the entire story of the Haggadah. Then he goes on to, so then we say that Baruch Shomer after Chasul Yisrael Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mechashiv is Akeitz. We bless Hashem for keeping His promise to the Jewish people. And again, the obvious question, why is it a praise to Hashem that He keeps His word? Even just today's Daf Yomi, Mamish, if a person doesn't keep their word, then they're Mechusrei Amana, Ein Racham Nochem Emenu, He's Mekabel Misha Para, you know, these terrible, terrible things for someone who doesn't keep their word. So, oh God, you're so great, you actually keep your word. So he suggests that the Shevach HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not because Hashem kept His promise. There's no bracha because Hashem kept His promise. The Shevach is that He kept that promise specifically with us. Meaning the promise was made to Avram Avinu at the Bris Ben Absarim. Avram Avinu had a Yishmael, and Yitzchak had an Esav, and it could have been any one of the lines of the Avram Avinu and Sari Imenu tree could have been the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps this promise with. So we're saying, Baruch Shomer Haftachaso, we're putting the, as Rabbi Yudin likes to say, the emphasis on the wrong syllable, right? It's not that we're blessing Him for being Shomer Haftachaso. It's we're blessing Him for being Shomer Haftachaso li Yisrael, that He chose to be Shomer Haftachaso to us, and He could have been Shomer Haftacha to anybody else. And again, that's highlighting the point that he keeps going back to of Bechiras Am Yisrael, a sense of the chosenness of Am Yisrael. And then he says, and the next paragraph reads, V'hi Sha'amda. He Sha'amda Lavoseinu V'lanu. He says, why is that He Sha'amda Lavoseinu V'lanu? How did that promise be what, that promise that He made to Avram Avinu, you know how long it lasted? Till we got out of Mitzrayim. Right? That was the whole Bris Min HaBasar. You're going to be slaves, you'll get out of Mitzrayim. That's it. Promise up. Right? And then move on to the next promise or whatever, but that's it. So what do you mean? He sham the lavel seinu v'lanu? Shabachal davidor omdim aleinu l'chalo seinu? It's not all made for forever. The Bris Min HaBasarim has a deadline, and that's Yetzias Mitzrayim. So he said, no, he is not going back on the Bris Ben Absarim that was described in the last paragraph. Because that's only on Hatzalas Mitzrayim. The he is going on what the Magid writes, Shalo Echad Bilvad Amad Aleinu L'chaloseinu El Shabchol Dor V'dor Omdim Aleinu L'chaloseinu. What's omit for us is that consistently people try to harm us, people try to kill us, and consistently HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Matzilenu Miyadam. Consistently HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us. And the fact that we are still here is a testament to that, and it's a testament to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show His great love for us. And that's the He Sha'amda Lavasin Vlanu. What keeps us going is because Hashem has such great love that in each and every generation, when they try to destroy us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu miraculously saves us. I someone just texted me about an hour and a half ago saying that they were in Eretz Yisrael on Motzei Shabbos, and they woke up Sunday morning, essentially, to news of what was nothing short of a great miracle, right? Now, do we know what the future holds and where this is going? And what? No, we don't know anything. But we do know, take it day by day, and we do know that what happened in Eretz Yisrael on Motzei Shabbos was a miracle. Nothing short of a modern-day miracle. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of what these missiles look like. It's not like little darts, This is nothing short of a modern-day miracle. The person wanted to know, what do you do with that? Do I bench Gomel because I was in Israel? What do I do? How do you handle this kind of living through a miracle? And I'm not sure what the full answer is. But part of the answer is that when we experience the Seder this year, there's a very clear and precise kavana that needs to be had at the Seder. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a miracle, we're supposed to notice, right? It's supposed to mean something to us. And it's supposed to play out in what we, when we talk about Shemchol Dover Dor Omdim Aleinu L'chaloseinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Matzilenu Miyadam, it's not in theory. We can tell our children, you are alive as this is happening. We're seeing it happen right now. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Matzilenu Miyadam, and make no mistake about it, that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who saves us. Of course, there's always logical explanations, rational explanations why things happen. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the wisdom to man to be able to figure out how to shoot down that many rockets and missiles and different kinds of things that they were shooting at. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam, and that's a great sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for Klal Yisrael. He said his other suffix about this paragraph is we're so proud, it's so great for us that in every generation they try to kill us, and Hashem saves us. He said, what would be even better? To be them. No one's trying to kill them. why is it so great that in every generation they're trying to kill us? Why is that such a shevach for us? He says, because if you understand what the purpose of life is, then you understand this. He says, Klal Yisrael has a purpose in being here. And the Redifas HaGayim is part of that purpose, because it's through that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs acts of Hatzalah, where the world sees his greatness. And if one lives with the mission of being a Merkava L'Shechina, if one lives with the mission of being Mekadesh Shem Shemayim B'Farhesia, you want to be the vehicle for that Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And it is something, a point of great pride, that we are targeted constantly, and therefore each time we're saved and each generation that survives is another Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And when we get to be the vehicle of Kiddush Shem Shemayim, that's the purpose, that's the goal of our lives. Okay, we'll do one more. Tzeilamad, Ma Bikesh Lavan Arami. He says, move to the end of the Haggadah. We'll move to the end of Magid at least. Let's skip to the end of Magid. So toward the end of Magid, we have the Dayenu, right? So further on, all the way at the end, but we have the Dayenu. So he says, L'chora, the obvious question about the Dayenu is that it really would not have been Dayenu had, for many of these things, we just would have died without many. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give us food in the Midbar, we would have died. So it would not really have been Dayenu without it. He said also, some of these things are out of order. Most of the things are Keseder, but Nesinos Mamonam is not Keseder. The Nesinos Mamonam is listed over here before Harigas Bechoreim. And really, we asked for the Mamon, the Nesinos Mamonam is, how does it go? He has a couple of them that he thinks are out of order. But let's just do the Dayenu piece. Why is it Dayenu? So he says Dayenu does not mean to say that we would have been okay. Dayenu means to say what the point of living is. Meaning if the point of living is to be Marbe Kavod Shemayim, is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to demonstrate his Ahava for Klal Yisrael and to demonstrate our being the Am HaNivchar, and our appreciating our role as the Am HaNivchar and being Marbe Kavod Shemayim, any one of these events was such a great Riboy Kavod Shemayim that it would accomplish that goal. Dayenu for that goal, not Dayenu. The classic part they say is Dayenu, we'd have to say thank you. Dayenu, that we'd have to have Hakaras HaTov, because someone does you a favor and allows you to live another day. Even if you die tomorrow, you have to have Hakaras HaTov for their efforts. No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying Dayenu for what we're put on this earth to do. And he says that's the alachas kama v'kama. He says alachas kama v'kama does not mean that, and therefore if he would have done us one favor, and now alachas kama v'kama, they did us 15 favors. No, he says al achas. It's on that one tova, that one good thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu, that his children are going to be a goy gadol, that's going to be mefarsim, the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So al achas, he says, tova kfula umechupelas. When you're just counting numbers, you don't call that kfula umechupelas. Kfula umechupelas means that it's the same thing over and over and over again, because it's all the same thing. It's all about being marbe kavod shemayim. That's the achas, that's kfula and mechupelas. That's the one thing that is doubled and doubled over and over again. Okay, this is just a sampling of some of the content of the Ma'aseh Hashem, but hopefully we were able to pick up on some of the critical themes for the Haggadah. Everyone should have a Chag Kosher v'Sameach.